last week on Central Standard, we did a program looking at two area organizations doing what they could to help KC's urban youth, including one group called the Legacy Foundation.
If you spend time with some children or some child, you'll be surprised at what they can do.
And another group called High Aspirations.
9 times out of 10, we don't know about the things that's happening in these young males' lives because they don't talk about them. But the problem is there. Often it's too late.
I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we continue our coverage on how area programs are helping KC's young people with a look at the United Way of Greater Kansas City. Plus, later in the hour, a look at where the funds for the Missouri levee repairs are drying up, and how the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is determining what gets fixed and what doesn't. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. Many of us can remember halftime commercials of our favorite football players kneeling down and posing next to children and telling us how much they loved and supported kids, and that it was all thanks to the United Way. But that's just the surface. The United Way is a community server organization that serves community service organizations. Today, we'll find out how and in what ways. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Joining us now is Julie Riddle, Senior Community Impact Manager for the United Way of Greater Kansas City. Julie, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Jabalani.
Tell us first what the United Way does, and then specifically here in Kansas City.
So our mission is to mobilize the caring power of Kansas City, and we do that in a number of ways. The way we're most well known for that is raising funds in the workplace and with individuals to help fund critical and needed programs, social service programs in the Kansas City area. The other thing that we are doing as we change our model of service is to really put a stake in the ground around critical issues in the Kansas City area, around education, income, and health.
And you look at at-risk youth.
We look at at-risk youth specifically in our income financial stability project called Decade of Difference.
And tell us about Decade of Difference and how that works.
Okay. Decade of Difference is focused on 16 to 26-year-olds who are at risk for a number of reasons. Perhaps they come from a single-parent family. Perhaps they're a survivor of abuse or domestic violence. They may be homeless. They may have a record in the criminal justice system. And they are unlikely to be able to take advantage of all of the social services and all of the amenities of our city unless they have some support.
And so that's a critical decade between 16 to 26, the decade that makes a difference, hence the title of the program.
The Gates Foundation identified that if young people aren't able to establish a firm foothold financially and socially by the time they're 30, then they're much less likely to be able to do that when they get older, and their kids are likely to remain in poverty. So that's why we want to capture this group of people when we can get them.
But in this case, it's not 30, it's 26.
Right.
You focus on at-risk youth. Can you step back a little bit and define what you consider to be at risk?
So some of the kids and young people that we're working with really are literally homeless. They may sleep on the streets or do couch hopping between friends' houses. They may be in the foster care system. They may just be really poor. They may come from families where there isn't enough to eat. They can't get their basic needs met. They may be survivors, again, of violence. So they may come from homes where there was a parent who was violent to his or her spouse.
And what are the basic values because of these calamities that these children are missing in this critical decade?
I'm not sure that we can say that a whole group of people are missing values. I can say that I think they're missing a lot of opportunities.
Given that, there are certain values that people take for granted in another sort of 16 to 26 group that aren't couch surfing, that aren't homeless, and value, the word and what you assign value to, is a different thing.
There's certainly an expectation, let's say, among middle and upper income families that their kids will go to college. that they will get a job where they can earn enough money to have a nice house and get a car and have enough to eat, that there is a future, in fact. And one of the things that we see with young people who have had a lot of challenges is that they may not see a future like that for themselves. And access to post-secondary education, whether that's college or trade school, help with financial education, help getting and maintaining a job are the kinds of things that can build self-esteem and opportunities for young people.
So financial education then becomes the benchmark of that in terms of teaching kids to save and teaching kids to believe they have a future, simultaneously encouraging them to focus on something outside of their very grim realities.
Outside of today and tomorrow, I would say.
Outside of short-term thinking.
Exactly. One of the sort of fathers of the theory of asset development is a guy from St. Louis. His name's Michael Sheradin, and he talks about assets being hope in concrete form. And so that might mean saving for school. It might mean saving for a home or a car. It might mean the difference between just putting aside enough money to buy your school clothes so that you can do that and feel good about yourself, you know, at the beginning of the school year. And that's part of what we want to instill in the young people that our community partners are working with. And we want to make sure that the rest of the community sees the young people that we deem, quote unquote, at risk as valuable and even invaluable members of our community.
I'm going to take you through a scenario. Let's say if a kid, for instance, grows up with a mother on drugs and a father in prison, it's pretty typical scenario in some of the urban neighborhoods that we see. In what ways, step by step, do you encourage them to focus on something, as you said, outside of today and tomorrow? What are some of the key steps in this process with a child from this background?
Well, we're very lucky. We have some really brilliant community partners that do this work, that are on the ground every day doing this work. And one of the things that they do is they meet the kids where they are. They get to know them and what's important to them and help them set goals that are measurable and achievable. So, you know, you don't walk up to someone who doesn't know where he's going to sleep tomorrow and start talking about, you know, saving for college. That's not the first thing you talk to them about. You figure out what they need and what their goals are. And you surround them with the kind of support that they need in order to make those choices and those goals come true.
And in what ways do you identify partners that can be that mediator, so to speak, that can go and address the immediate issues and then get to the, to coin a phrase of a group that we had on last week, the higher aspirations?
Mm-hmm. We look for partners that have skill and experience working with young people in this age group. And United Way is fortunate to have a number of partners that have decades of experience in this. And we also wanted some partners who were interested in this idea of financial education and access to post-secondary education as a key piece of the outcomes that they want to achieve with youth.
You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR and streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guest today is with the local United Way chapter, Julie Riddle, the Senior Community Impact Manager for the United Way of Greater Kansas City. Kansas City, how do you define at-risk youth, and what are the most vital tools you think teenagers in this critical 16 to 26 group need to grow into adults? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also chat with us on Facebook or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Have community service approaches, Julie, changed over the years toward this critical demographic? What larger forces have changed that make the needs of today a little bit different?
Well, we had talked about that, you know, our workforce is changing. And we estimate that by 2018, 60% of the jobs in the Kansas City area will require some kind of post-secondary education, so some kind of skill beyond high school. So that's a piece of it. We've lost, for the most part, our manufacturing base. It's not likely or often that someone's going to graduate from high school and be able to earn the kind of family-sustaining wage that we were able to do 30 or 40 years ago. So that's certainly a piece of it.
And with those challenges, you're not going to be able to work at the Firestone plant at a high school or at a civil defense manufacturing plant or something that involves hands or crafts or trade. With that in mind, with this being a knowledge and consumer economy, how does that change the equation?
One of the things that we need to work on very hard is getting youth involved in education and programs that help them with STEM learning, science, technology, education, and math. And there are several groups in Kansas City that are working on that, including United Way. The other piece is that we need, as a community, I think, to help them envision themselves in those roles. So start talking to young people early about what being a scientist means, about what the knowledge economy means, bridging those gaps, if they exist, between the access to technology, access to information about what's possible for them.
And how do you deal with the lack of attention spans today? There's so much going on with the increases in technology and things of that nature.
Well, successful youth development, it's very important to have project-based and activity-based learning. So you're not going to sit a 16-year-old in a classroom and talk to him or her for 3 hours.
That's what I was getting at.
Yeah. I mean, you can do that, but they'll have checked out in 5 minutes. So they learn, as most of us do, by doing. So service learning projects. One of the components of Decade of Difference is a project called Project Rise, which is an education-conditioned paid internship project. So we, with our partners, Full Employment Council and Catholic Charities of Kansas City St. Joseph, focus on 18 to 24-year-olds who don't have a high school diploma or GED and have been unemployed for at least 6 months. And if they can read at the sixth grade level, and if they are willing to participate in the project for a year, they can get a paid internship for 18 weeks at minimum wage, and they can get ongoing help and support to complete their educational goals and get a good job.
We have Susan on the line from Northland. Hello, Susan.
Hi. The population I'm most concerned about are kids with ADD and ADHD. The latest census information shows that 1 in 10 kids are being diagnosed with this now, most of them in the Midwest and the South. And a study was just published in the journal Pediatrics in September showing 65% of these kids have a learning disorder called written motor language disorder. In the quote-unquote normal population, that's less than 15%. So we need to start working with these kids earlier, and we need to start and helping them anticipate and focus so that they can be adults that in the future are able to anticipate, are able to plan, are able to fulfill the roles of taking care of us in our old age, because they have trouble with anticipation. They have trouble with being able to make plans and stick to them and stuff like that. And this is a real hardcore issue, and we need to start earlier in their lives.
And Susan, what do you suggest, as we're talking with Julie from the United Way, what do you suggest as some of the early tools? She's identifying the 16 through 26 demographic. You suggest, do you need to start earlier than that?
Earlier than that, yeah, because with so many kids being diagnosed so much earlier, what the American Academy of Pediatrics has suggested is, first of all, occupational therapy with these kids so that they kind of ingrain this information into their brain about doing things. Just like occupational therapy in someone who's had a stroke retrains their brain. And this is a, you know, this is an issue that could help these kids function in a manner that is more grounded in a real-life situation.
Thank you very much, Susan, for your thoughts. Julie, do you have any thoughts on Susan's thoughts? You're focusing on a specific demographic. By the time they're 16, they probably the age of a driver's license, the age of perhaps sexual activity, the age of perhaps drug use, the age of big peer pressure, in other words. What do you feel about Susan's assertion that some of these kids you need to get to earlier?
Well, so just to be clear, United Way funds programs
umbrella
across the spectrum, including early education. And I think Susan's absolutely right, especially in terms of studies around brain development, that paying attention to the kids' learning is really important under three and certainly up through third grade. So that's key. And also being able to be attentive to their needs and abilities and potential disabilities at that age. So I don't disagree with that at all. We do have to address the issue of what happens with the young people who slide through those safety nets. We have them. They're going to be struggling, and they're going to be our leaders and workers and teachers. And so we're going to have to deal with them in 10 years or so anyway.
Something interesting about the United Way of Greater Kansas City is that you guys don't often, unless you do it on your own, deal with these kids directly. You fund groups that do. So how do you choose these partners? You've identified the problem areas. You've made a definition of what at-risk youth are. But how do you then identify the groups that then go hand-in-hand, so to speak?
In terms of decade of difference, we're looking for partners that have the capacity to work with youth over a long period of time, because this is not a one-off kind of thing. You're not going to be able to make an impact on a young person if you spend just 30 minutes with them. So we're looking for that kind of capacity, some proven ability to have good outcomes with youth. And so some of the partners that we're working with have shown that. Again, also this interest and aptitude for the portion of the project that's focused on post-secondary education. How are we going to get youth who might not otherwise be focusing on or thinking about education past high school? How are we going to help get them there?
How have changes in resources, funding, and the identification of problems helped or hindered the efforts of the United Way here in the Metro specifically?
We've been very fortunate in Kansas City to be able to, in the last several years, maintain our funding. And we just announced a couple of weeks ago that actually we met our goal and exceeded it. So we raised $36 million.
Wow. Any advice for people who are having funding problems? You seem to be a rare case.
I think hopefully one of the reasons that's true is that we are really listening to what the community is saying is important to them. And in this era of dwindling resources, we have to make sure that we are delivering results, solid outcomes, and we have to listen to our donors and our community in order to give back to them the kind of changes that they're asking for.
816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We are on live with Julie Riddle, the Senior Community Impact Manager for the United Way of Greater Kansas City. We want to hear from you on what you consider at-risk youth and what things can be done to address their problems. The United Way has been very keen, Julie, on individual development accounts, or IDAs. Tell us about the origins and philosophies behind IDAs in terms of developing life skills.
Sure. IDAs are matched savings accounts designed to help the saver save for a long-term and appreciating asset. So that might be paying for post-secondary education. It might be purchasing their first home, starting a business. And the origin of this comes from the gentleman that I referenced earlier, Michael Sheradin, who postulated in the 90s that most of us in the U.S., make economic advances through asset development, savings and investing. And lower income families don't have the same kinds of opportunities to do that, because much of what we do is through the tax code. So he postulated that that we need to offer the same kinds of incentives to save and invest to folks who wouldn't be able to benefit from that. So an IDA, ours, in fact, matches participant savings 2-to-1. So they save up to $2,000 and receive a 2-to-1 match specifically to pay for post-secondary education.
So if they save $2,000, they get $1,000.
They get $4,000.
They get $4,000. Mm-hmm. Two to one the other way. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the maximum savings amount in your case would be what?
would be $6,000 per individual to be used specifically to pay for post-secondary education. So, you know, to college or university or trade school.
Now, here's the trick right here, the kicker. With financial literacy programs for the impoverished, how do you get people with very little disposable income to save? How do you send that message down through the channels with your partners?
So it's not easy. It's certainly not easy when everybody or many people are really focusing on basic needs. But one of the things that you do is you concentrate on what the goals of the young people are. And you asked about how IDAs could be a tool to make changes. And part of that is tapping into what the young people want for themselves. So how do I forego the thing that I want to buy more than anything today? It's that I really want to go to college or buy a house or buy a car tomorrow.
That goes beyond and back to the philosophy of thinking beyond today and tomorrow,
mm-hmm.
that you have to try to instill. Mm-hmm. What are some of the other major barriers that you and your partner organizations have come across and that you need to get around to drive this message home?
Well, one of the major barriers is that our project requires the youth to have earned income. They have to be working. And youth in our community and across the country are at higher risk for unemployment than anyone else. So that's really difficult. It's hard for them to find jobs in order to save.
So an example of that would be your work with the Full Employment Council. How does that work?
The Full Employment Council is working specifically on Project Rise. So those young people who are disconnected from the educational employment system, we're working with them on those internships, those long-term internships. But also the Full Employment Council has a variety of relationships with all kinds of employers. And they take people, young people, and anyone who comes in the door and takes them from where they are in terms of their aptitudes and their needs, and they work to connect them to resources.
Julie, there seems to be a great deal of political wrangling about what constitutes actual help versus handouts in this economic climate amid the policy furor. How does the United Way locally navigate that slippery slope? You have a lot of partner organizations with a lot of different goals and a lot of different funding sources. How do you deal with the politics of that? Even though you've met your funding goals, how do you deal with the politics of that?
You know, one of the things United Way wants, and that we all want, is that we want to change the underlying community conditions. We don't just want to put Band-Aids on these huge gaping problems. And often that requires a lot of money, but it also requires a singularity of purpose. You know, folks coming together and agreeing on what the priorities are for a community. And that's part of what I'm talking about when I say that we're listening to people.
Have you arrived at a singularity of purpose? What is that singularity of purpose?
In each of our areas of impact, education, income, and health, we have, with our volunteers, identified community change initiatives that United Way really wants to put a stake in the ground and say, we want to, if possible, move the needle on this issue. So in the area of income or financial stability, that 16 to 26-year-old age group is part of what we're looking at. How can we help change the underlying community conditions in order to make things better for young people in this age group?
We've been talking about financial literacy, youth empowerment for people between the ages of 16 and 26, and self-determination initiatives in the KC Metro with Julie Riddle, Senior Community Impact Manager for the United Way of Greater Kansas City. Julie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we return, a look at the progress of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, the progress that they're making on the Missouri levees.